9, we'll start at 9:30. I hope that please do take notice next time about the starting time of the meeting. However, there is no train smash. Fine. Today's meeting, you're coming to brief us on the first quarter expenditure.
Sorry, Chair, I just want to say everybody looks happy. It seems to me we've got pay this morning.
Except me.
Isn't that you?
I don't know.
It's a worst day today, if I can say so they're coming to brief us on the first quarterly report. On Thursday, colleagues, remember we agreed that I make a statement for the fourth quarterly report. It means that someone at the end of the first quarterly report will also will be nominated to make that statement amongst us. We're not there yet. We have not even started with it. We're only starting with it. There has been a kind of a delay in terms of actually when to bring this report to us. It's something that we really need to look at closely. Section 32 of PFMA talks about 30 days, and now the first report ended in June. We're almost now at the end of the second report, second quarter. We have not, it's only now that we're receiving this report. But I do understand that in the past, maybe it was easy to get this report because the focus was on figures, as people spent the right share, if you call it that. Next door, Madam. If they spend 25% of the quarter. Now, I think that as these financial reforms evolve, clearly we're no longer talking figures only. We're putting meat on those figures. I think that very soon would also want that those reports also include a performance side, so that we say, what has this money been spent on? Has there been value for money on those? With those few words, I would like to hand over to you, Sarina.
Okay, thank you very much, Chair. Use the microphone, I suppose. Thank you very much. I do apologize on behalf of myself and Zarina that we weren't on time this morning. We didn't realize that it did start at 9:30 until we got here. But it's the earlier the better for us, really. I always make sure that I fly in the night before for any morning meetings in Cape Town. You can make them earlier. Zarina's here full time, obviously, so the earlier we start, then the better in any case. So we'll make sure that we're always here on time. Chair, I wanted to pick up on some of your comments before I jump into the presentation that you made this morning. This morning we are tabling now a new format of a quarterly in-year spending report for the committee's purposes. If it works for the committee, and once we are able to engage with it and we get comments and back from the committee and recommendations for improvement, we want to publish this document probably on the Treasury's website. As it is, we do similar publications on a quarterly basis for provincial spending. We already publish this information at an aggregated vote level every month, That's in fact gazetted, what we call the Section 32 report. So the information is published, but not at the lower, more detailed levels. And it's an intention that the Treasury has to share this, to publish this report, so that it can inform discussions throughout society and interrogate where people oversee through their non-governmental organizations, civil society organizations, through other oversight entities, in addition to the to Parliament, such as the Presidency and the PSC, and constitutional entities can take advantage of the same information that we're sharing with you. So there was a delay in getting this report produced because we had to go back to the drawing board in a sense and think about and produce a report that we've never produced before, which is ironic because we produce an appropriations bill that Parliament passes and reviews, but we've never actually produced a report against that appropriations bill in and of itself. Obviously, all the elements in the appropriations bill are reported in different documents, whether it's the economic classification cut that you look at, or the program cut, or spending against earmarks and the like. That are the funny thing about the Appropriations Act and why it's such a useful document is it brings together all sorts of a mix, and I'll talk a little bit about this now, but it brings together a mix of spending classifications, different ways of cutting and dicing the spending information, which isn't easily produced by any of our systems, because our accounting system produces accounting information, and it also produces the program spending information. But there are things like earmarks that are attached to specific projects in the Appropriations Act that are not captured in any particular system. We don't have a project spending reporting system. We've added a project segment to the Standard Chartered Accounts only this year. In fact, it was last year, but only this year is the information starting to get used. So there are things that are in the Appropriations Act that don't easily come out of our existing financial management systems. And so to produce a report against it took some time. It took some time to talk to explain to departments the need and the necessity for this particular report as we asked them to respond to us. So we should be on a firm foundation now with this and be able to produce it for the committee every quarter. This quarter ends at the end of the month. And we should be able to produce the same report as we do with the Section 32 on the same timetable, which is a month after the end of the quarter. And that's our intention. What I'm going to be discussing with you all this morning, and it's going to be a fairly concise presentation, because I'm not going to be going through the detailed vote-by-vote expenditure trends. I'll be producing, sharing, we've handed out, and I'll be explaining to the committee what all is contained in the reports that I've shared. We've also shared with the committee staff the electronic versions of the Excel document that then can be used for much deeper data mining, so to speak, by the committee staff as they interrogate some of the numbers. But I will be talking through the report at a higher level and pointing the committee and to as where the relevant information can be found. As I mentioned already, the appropriation bill format is an important tool by which Parliament allocates funds for the performance of specific functions by the executive, who are supposed to undertake those functions, not supposed to, but are responsible for undertaking those functions in an efficient, economical, effective, and equitable way. And so this is the basis for our report for the Standing Committee on Appropriations. And as I said already, it's a mix of selected budget and accounting items, including program and economic classification items, as well as methods of finance, as I call them. That's just a fancy way of talking about conditional grants. Conditional grant is just a method of financing something that takes a service delivery that takes place in another sphere of government, either local or provincial. But in fact, conditional grants are something that we don't easily report on easily in our accounting system that is produced by provincial treasuries and provincial legislatures who pass the budgets related to the spending on equitable share grants, for example. We also have earmarks, which are usually specifically and exclusively appropriated. That means that if you look at the Appropriations Act, which we handed out at the last committee meeting, there are a number of items in there that are actually have an asterisk next to them, which means that they're not discretionary transfers on behalf of the department who transferred those, or whether they're transferring to entities or it's a conditional grant. These are transfers that must take place. Obviously, conditions must be met by the department, for example, the tabling of a business plan by the entity to the department and being accountable to the minister. But the minister cannot decide to reduce that that transfer. They can withhold the transfer if certain conditions are not met, but they cannot reduce it and take those and use those funds for other purposes through a vaiement or a shift of some sort that's catered for in the PFMA. And so they're quite strictly sort of controlled in most cases when you're looking at any items that are specifically and exclusively allocated. So the Treasury's, in addition to the report that we're discussing this morning, the Treasury's has undertaken a project to improve the consistency of the presentation in the appropriations bill. What gets earmarked? Quite often things that are earmarked or items that are earmarked are determined in conjunction between our public finance chief directorates and the department, and those are identified in the allocation letters that are signed by our minister and at the end of November, early December, whereby departments are then instructed to make their allocations to their programs based on the overall envelope of money available for the department. That's after the medium-term expenditure committee in the Treasury has made recommendations to the Minister's Committee on the Budget, and certain items are earmarked. But what gets earmarked hasn't always been very consistent, and there's a project underway to sort of review what is earmarked and what items are specific and exclusive. Some items need to be identified in the Appropriations Act, but discretion on behalf of the accounting officer needs to be provided so we don't asterisk every item in the appropriation bill. We're also working on standardizing program definitions, and I'll talk a little bit about that project in a bit. Again, talking about what is designated as specific and exclusive, and also looking at how we represent the transfers to entities in the appropriation bill itself. If you look at the appropriation bill, you'll find, for example, for the Treasury's, in Treasury's bill pattern, as well as in the Department of International Cooperation, you'll find transfers to United Nations, and that is a number that is provided. That is, in fact, a sort of aggregated number that we have merged to sort of reduce the length of the Appropriations Act. But in fact, when you look at transfers to the United Nations, that might be accounted for by three or four small transfers to different programs at the United Nations. But for our purposes, we aggregate them. Now, in some cases, we've looked at those sort of aggregations and said maybe it makes sense to still split them out, whether it's so that you get more information. You don't just see one number to the UN and wonder, well, what's that for, when in fact it is for four different programs. Maybe it's for the World Food Program. Maybe it's also for our fees, membership fees to the United Nations. Maybe it's also for UNAIDS in Geneva. So it's for different offices. And the way that we sort of merge those sometimes, we've thought, doesn't allow for the maximum amount of transparency. So we're just looking at things like that. But that's very much sort of technicalities. But the reason I mentioned it for the committee this morning is because, as Mr. Donaldson mentioned last time we were at your committee, that we want to have a discussion with the committee about how you might be, how you might go about considering the format of the appropriations bill ahead of the budget finalization, so that when the committee would make recommendations and adopt the structure of the bill prior to the Minister of Finance tabling the bill on Budget Day. One of the main reasons we are sort of being proactive in this regard is because of the Money Bills Amendment Act that Parliament passed last year that allows Parliament to make amendments to the tabled appropriation. And one of the things we'd like to ensure there's sort of stability in is the program and bill structure. Once we put together the bill structure and we've tabled the budget and the E&E has been developed, our systems are then locked essentially into what the departments have told us they want to, how they want to allocate their funds. And if Parliament uses its discretion and changes the program or merges programs or wants to create different structures, then it'll require a lot of work on the part of Treasury to update its systems accordingly so that the systems match the Act by the time it's passed, by the time the Department starts spending. So there'll be sort of a back and forth. Obviously, Parliament has got the discretion to make those changes with the Money Bills Amendment Act, and we just want to make sure as a Treasury that we sort of are able to sequence these activities properly so that they don't cause delays in the beginning of the financial year when departments need to get on with their business. And so we want to again discuss how the committee could review that structure ahead of tabling and involve the committee in some of these efforts to improve the presentation and structure. In particular, as we mentioned this to the committee before, we're reviewing the program budget structure. The purpose of that is to improve the functionality of program budgeting. The idea of program budgeting is to bring another dimension to the budget. South Africa has used program budgeting for literally decades, but we've built on it and enhanced it over the years, and after decades of using it, we've gotten to a point where we think that there's a lot of sort of areas where the program structure isn't enhancing transparency. Over the years, through the departments have evolved their structure, changing a program here and there each year, and after a few years, you look at the structure and you say, this doesn't really talk to the department's mandate or objectives. It doesn't really help political decision making to understand, based on sort of government's priorities and objectives, where the money is being spent. It doesn't really assist in the prioritization effort. To what extent is the program structure being used for internal management purposes? And to what extent is the budget as represented by the program structure showing clear connections to government-wide strategic frameworks such as the priorities identified in the medium-term strategic framework? So we've started a project whereby we want to assess the program budget structures of each vote. In many cases, we'll just confirm the structure because it's adequate and it works. In some cases, we'll want to revise the structure. And this is going to be a very structured engagement with departments. The PFMA says that the Minister of Finance can table the budget in the format that he or she determines. So, in fact, the budget structure is the Minister of Finance's purview, but it also says, of course, Parliament passes the budget, the appropriation, and that the main divisions or programs are also determined at the same time as by Parliament when they pass the revised the Appropriation Act. Of course, the DG of a department is also given very specific functions and responsibilities in the PFMA to carry out the budget, so we wouldn't exclude the department in our reviews of the program budget structure. So in a sense, we have to bring into this discussion Parliament, the department, and we're actively pursuing that that process. So as part of our ongoing engagements with the committee, we want to bring to the committee's attention when we've completed a review of a budget structure of a department, we want to bring that to the committee, present that, and get the committee's get the committee to consider the renewed approved structure. So we've defined an approval process for that whereby we engage with the department, the two DGs sign off on the finalized structure, and then we bring that to the committee for the committee's consideration. Once that's finalized, it gets incorporated in the next appropriation bill, and it will go through the normal processes of Ministers Committee on the Budget and Cabinet, and then the entire Parliament as it goes through the process and gets adopted by the National Assembly. We've developed a guideline for this program budgeting project so that as a point of reference for us and the department to so that we're sort of talking from the same page. We defined what a program is and I presented it here. It's a management unit established within a department charged with the delivery of one or more clearly defined services in relation to mandates and specific objectives. One point to make here is we are clearly defining it as a management unit. It's not just a package of rands and cents to based on the ideas of any one administration or a DG or a treasury, that we want to say this is a management unit and should be used for management purposes to enhance some of the ideas that I mentioned here in these bullets, to enhance specifically accountability and management of funds. The elements of a program budget structure go beyond just the program and what one sees in the appropriation bill, for example. In particular, we want to emphasize measurable objectives and performance indicators, something that the chair mentioned earlier, that these are part and parcel of the program structure. It's not just a program name and program purpose and then an allocation, but much more detail on what the allocation is actually meant to achieve in terms of setting up targets and setting up objectives that should be linked to national priorities. We also want to elevate sort of visibility of transfers to public entities and also elevate sort of the identity of whoever the program manager is, because again we want to emphasize this as an element of program management. Sub-programs of course also play an important part because those really talk to the activities of the program. And what you do is different from what you intend to achieve by doing those activities. So those are both important. But under the program, we want to talk about sort of the intentions behind the activities, but we still want to be able to identify what it is that's actually being purchased with budgeted funds in those specific activities that are actually being undertaken and funded. So far, we have field tested this guide, and by field testing, we've taken it to 4 or 5 departments, gotten their input on it and got positive feedback as to what the usefulness of this guide would be for them. And we've taken that process forward now with the Department of Health, Defence and Labour to review the structures. So we're actually engaging with them actively as we speak this week, next week, following week, and would hopefully by the end of middle of October, end of October, have revised program budget structures for these 3 departments. If we're ready on time, the revised structures will be incorporated in the 2010-11 appropriation bill. These are probably the only 3 departments whose structure changes would impact on the 10-11 appropriation bill. We'll be working next year with other departments, but those changes won't take effect until much later. In terms of this report, we've handed out or circulated about a 35-page report that is that's shown in the format as presented on the slide. There's a vote per page, and what we've done is provided a spending per vote by starting with the appropriated amount and allowing for departments to identify vitamin shifts and rollovers. Now, these rollovers, of course, don't take effect until the adjustment budget is passed by Parliament. And in most cases, they're not effective until the adjustment budget has come in or has been passed. But in a couple of instances, departments have been given tentative approval for rollovers, and those are identified. The third column identifies the available budget. So that's simply just the difference between what was appropriated, what's been shifted and vied in the first quarter, and then what is actually available in that program. We then provide a year-to-date expenditure for the first quarter, and then a calculation that determines the percent of budgets expended year-to-date. Now, what's shown on the board is in fact, I merged columns there from what's shown on the slide, because for each of these categories, appropriated, vironments, available, year-to-date spending, for each of these categories, the numbers are broken out by the three high levels of economic classification, that is current payments, transfers and subsidies, and payments for capital assets. It is a voluminous report in that it stretches across the page. The nice thing about Excel, as your staff know very well, and some of us also know who work with Excel extensively, that you can hide it, you can shrink it, you can reduce it. When you need to do analysis in the spreadsheet, you will be able to obviously manipulate the data in many ways, and we're looking forward to getting lots of questions and comments, as we have in the past, from your staff when they actually dig into the numbers as they are presented. Unfortunately, some of these reports are difficult to present in a printed format, so I apologize for some votes that are shown in those pages that are printed in tiny text.
Sorry, Chair, just on a point of order.
Yes.
I didn't quite get what he said with regard to rollovers and environments. In which column is this shown on this page? I'm not exactly sure.
Okay. Chair, I apologize. That is my fault. What I've done so that this can be printed is I've hidden the columns as shown on the slides there. I've hidden the columns for appropriated budget and for vironments. I've hidden the columns on the printed sheet. So I apologize. It's not in there. It's in the Excel document. It's shown on the board. I hid those just so that we could print this in a legible format. In the first quarter, there's not a lot of shifting and wiring of funds. So obviously, get the clerk to share with you another version, a printed version of the report. It's all in the Excel document, but I didn't print it, so thank you for catching that. There's very few vironments and rollovers and shifts in the first quarter. In the second quarter, it's definitely much more relevant. In the third quarter, they go away again because we clear them all out of the system through the adjustments budget. And then the fourth quarter, they're more prominent again. So that's something that the members and the staff will be able to dig into with the document file itself. Let me talk a little bit more about what the report then is about. The report provides some pointers for assessing national departmental performance. And again, I must emphasize that it is a national department-focused report. Although the nice thing about the Appropriations Act, when you look at each vote's detail, all conditional grants are identified. Now, of course, that's not the spending on the conditional grant, that's the transfer on the conditional grant. And we raised these issues with the committee when Julia De Brayden and Mahesh Fakir were here a couple of meetings ago, where at the national level, where transfers are undertaken primarily in terms of spending at the provincial level, you can look at the grant, you can see spending, you can see the money's going out the door from a national department's perspective, but you have to look at the provincial spending against those grants to understand the extent to which goods and services are actually being purchased, where that service delivery is actually occurring. What it does provide is, and so the expenditure detail is there at the program level. It's there with earmarks and with conditional grants and with variety of transfers. Most transfers to public entities are identified, which is also a useful area to of inquiry. Again, it also just talks to the transfer. But when a transfer is highlighted for the committee, it's at least brought to the attention. The next step then is further investigation to look into what activities are being undertaken for this. What are the sub programs if you're talking about departmental spending? What the report will also not necessarily tell you a lot about is operational efficiency, value for money. As we all know, that's not something that's easily obtained from reviewing reports of spending. Quite often, evaluation-type activities are necessary to understand when a program is funded, when the money is spent over a period of years, looking at the strategic plans, looking at the documents, looking at the reports, what was actually achieved for the funds that were allocated for a specific purpose. Luckily, we have a lot of us rely quite often on what comes out in the media, which it may or may not be a good indicator of what's really going on. So evaluation is an important area of our work. It's such an important area that the presidency there is now a minister of monitoring and evaluation and administration. And they're taking that evaluation aspect very important, because in the end of the day, that's quite often sort of where the crux of the matter falls, is when understanding, trying to assess what was actually achieved. Quality of the performance indicators. As I said in the program budget review project, we're reviewing the performance indicators. We want to elevate the importance of those. They're already specified, for example, in the estimate of national expenditure, but we need to keep pushing and improving on those performance indicators. There are a lot of issues with performance indicators, so they're not a panacea unless you understand in detail what you're looking at. What is the indicator actually telling you? If a department is coming up with performance indicators without input from the Treasury, from the Presidency, from Parliament, from society, in most cases, departments are going to choose the indicators, the ones that auditors call sweetheart indicators. We know this issue. We know it very well. It's just an issue that we raise for the committee to be aware of, that just because indicators are specified, just because performance looks good against indicators, doesn't mean that performance is good. We've got to, of course, keep pushing the envelope on the quality of the indicator, assessing what is actually being measured. Is it relevant? And in the framework for managing program performance information, we specified sort of the criteria for a good indicator, and I won't go through them here. I think the committee's quite aware of some of these issues, but it's just something that I want to highlight, because as we push forward with monitoring, measuring, that we must make sure we're doing it in a smart way. We're not causing sort of unintended consequences. There's a famous example from a few years back when Khada Asmal was the Minister of Education. He chose as his main measure the matric pass rate. And if you speak to people in the Department of Education, they'll say, we pushed up the matric pass rate, but we filtered students out of matric. Because we wanted to push that matric pass rate up, the unintended consequence down at the campus and school level was that teachers were holding back poorer performing students from getting into matric. So we improved the performance, but we actually reduced access to matric. Teachers, instead of working harder to keep those students on track, providing extra time for those students, ended up not undertaking some of those important responsibilities, and in the end of the day, matric pass rate looked a lot better, but there were all sorts of consequences to that. So when you're coming up with a sort of performance framework for whatever it is that you want to achieve, you have to make sure that it's fairly comprehensive, that you're not pushing one thing at the cost of another important priority, and that's where you can get the performance indicators if you sort of don't take a smart approach. we've talked about this as well, that in certain sectors the service delivery takes place at provinces and public entities, how provinces are monitored closely. My colleagues are in the NCOP today tabling the provincial or intergovernmental fiscal review, which is a document that we publish on an annual basis as a treasury that does go into great detail on sectoral basis of spending per sector and in each province. So that is monitored closely, but it's just what will be needed for the committee is, as I said, for further to pursue this line of questioning: is the money being spent in an efficient way? Are we achieving our objectives? Is to take this report as a starting point and then go on to other documents and pull in departments and question them directly. Public entities, as I mentioned before, also are treated quite differently. There are over 300 of them. They're not on the basic accounting system. They use accrual accounting. They're autonomous of the Public Service Act. They budget differently, i.e. not by program. We introduced program budgeting so that we can get away from the sort of cost of inputs and accounting terminology to allow people, budgeting people, non-accounting people, to understand what are the political and public interest purposes that the money is being spent on. And that is the main objective of program budgeting. Each public entity may or may not choose that method of budgeting. Sometimes their budgets are going to be more or less transparent than a departmental budget. So they're just different animals, and when reviewing their performance, one has to take a different perspective and really understand the business that they're in. In terms of the overarching, this is the last slide here, sort of spending trends of
just before we get to the figures, you know, I found your presentation very exciting, you know. I mean, some of the things that we have been looking for. I mean, some of the things that you mentioned. I don't know if I know now you're going to go to details now of spending. You know, you're not there yet.
Chair, no, I'm not going to be getting into the spending trend details of each vote. This is what I was going to finally close on is just an overview of the spending trend for the national departmental for national as a whole for the first quarter, and the spending trends are buried in the pages of the report using the Excel document and I haven't highlighted this, but I was going to just close. The other report that we handed out is a Word PDF document, 35-page document, that provides a spending trend analysis per vote, taking the figures that are in the Excel document. So for the committee members who don't want to go through the line-by-line data that's in the spreadsheet, the spending trends report, which is written up by our budget analysts, looking at the same figures that are in the spreadsheet, that will hopefully be useful in identifying where how money was actually spent, in what categories. They're going to take program cut, they're going to look at earmarks, they talk about economic classification, they talk about some of, in many cases, they provide explanations for trends that might look a little awry, like Department of Education spending 47% of its budget in the first quarter. That sounds odd. Of course, they make massive transfers in the first quarter to institutions of higher education. So in their case, it's not odd. So that's the kind of information that we provide in that document. And I will close now, Chair, by just sort of leaving this slide up there to say that basically so far, think that the report shows that national government as a whole has spent 23% of its budget. I'm just looking at 24% of its budget in the first quarter. We can look at that against as a whole against current payments and transfers and capital payments. They've only spent national government's only spent 16% of its capital assets or payments for capital assets category of spending against normal benchmark of 25%. So slow spending there in the first quarter. Transfers are have not been slow. In fact, that number is misleading in some cases when you look at just 25% across the board, 69 billion rand. You'll see that there's great variation across the votes in terms of those transfers. Again, higher ed has transferred most of it, not higher ed, Department of Basic Education has transferred to, at the moment, well, that's an important element that sort of just comes to mind, as I mentioned, basic education, higher education. This report is still formatted and presents the votes as a consolidated unit. We don't have, I think there are going to be a total of 38 or 39 votes by the time we go onto the new formats with split departments, with merged departments. So, for example, you have basic education and higher education as two separate departments now under two ministries. I'm not sure at what point the financial databases will be merged. Serena might know more than I do on that. May only be starting the beginning of the next fiscal year that we start reporting separately on basic education and higher education. But certainly for this report, we're looking at education as it was previously configured, and so you'll see how that we're still talking about 34 votes here. If we have updated the names of the votes where we were able to do that, where, for example, defense became defense and military veterans. We've updated the naming of the votes. But we haven't split out votes, for example, in the case of education, in the case of a number of other departments. So, yes, what I was talking about quickly is on transfers. We've got there it shows 25% of transfers made. So on the surface, it seems like it's right in line with the benchmark. Again, you'll see great variation there. There can be very good reasons for the variation. There can be other, instances where transfers haven't been made. The entities are expecting that transfer to be made. They may be running into cash flow problems. The department needs to be asked and needs to explain why it is a transfer hasn't been made when we know that the entity is expecting it. In some cases, they're going to say they haven't received the business plans or whatever the which are elements that are required, for example, in the PFMA. So you can look at those where transfers seem to be very small. The committee can follow up on those instances. I'll leave it at that, Chair. Thank you very much.
Item staff, thank you very much for the input. I see you just don't, you can't hold yourself. I think that is a good thing. But can I note 10 that would like to make comments? Only one hand, so far, Honorable Saft. Honorable Saft, Honorable Dr. Ravi, anyone else? Okay.
Well, maybe the tendency is that, maybe I'm being patriarchal.
I think you can give the ladies a chance first if you want to, Chair. I don't mind.
Do you want to come first, ma'am?
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. Chair, just first of all, I think it's, the area of expenditure by government, which I think is very important, is capital assets, because that's where a lot of job creation takes place. It's just an observation that I'm making. And it's very worrying to see that we've only spent 16% of the capital assets. So, the infrastructure is suffering as a result. That's just a remark. But then the presenter mentioned, that we will have a separate report on projects specifically, which is something that this committee has asked for. Does it appear somewhere in the support or in the reports that he's given us? That's the first question. The second one is that in the new
quarter, in the second quarter, violence and rollovers are going to be very important, and we would like to see from our side at least, you know, that we have a detailed report on specifically violence and rollovers in the, you know, after the second quarter, so that we can exactly know exactly what they went for and what they meant. And then the last question that I want to know is from the presenter and their view with regard to the budget office, you know, do we need it still? If we're going to have details of like they're giving us at the moment, and if we still do need it, is it going to be of assistance to them if there is a budget office in Parliament, which they can then, you know, which then can assist the committee? So I would just like to hear their views on that.
It's fine. I think that on the point, second point that you have raised about environment, it's really an issue that this committee is seized with. You know, we have asked, for instance, our researchers just to analyze, you know, very closely in terms of the previous, what you call a year, maybe two years so ago, in terms of those people that have been shifting funds around. Is it a pattern that they've taken? Because we are suspecting that departments sometimes budget only knowingly that they're just packing the money there. Sometimes at the right time they will shift these funds there. But we don't have what you call a fact so far. I think hence the question that the Honorable Swart is raising about the budget office. And the budget office will be very useful for those kinds of details for us. We might not have what you call the sufficient capacity now to go to those specific details. Because if we have to challenge, I've also noted it somewhere, if we have to challenge the Section 43, which allows it, which we think that it should continue to do that, but we think that this transferring of funds, the shifting of funds around, they must be done really because there's a need to do it. Not just people from the beginning of the year coming up with a budget, knowing that they're just packing funds, that they know that at some time they will, what you call, want to shift around. Honorable Dr. Rabia.
Thank you, Chair. Chairman, my question is fairly technical. On page 11 of the slide, in his submission, the presenter said that the PFMA does not cover public entities in the same way as national and provincial departments. Over 300 entities not on basic accounting system autonomous of the Public Service Act use accrual accounting budget differently. I'd like to say accrual is a fairly technical type of accounting. And I'd like to ask him just to explain in layman's term how it's different from the ordinary accepted accrual methods. Thank you, Chairman. Thanks.
And perhaps why are they allowed?
Yes, and why are they allowed to do that? Because uniformity is fairly important, Chairman, for in order for us to analyze and to see whether money is properly spent or not. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Chairperson. My first two questions were on violence and shifts. The other one was exactly on what Dr. Rabi has asked about. But the other thing that I would like to know from the presenters, are departments actually following the prescripts of the PFMA, particularly in regards to the objectives and their mandates? Because there is so much zigzagging at some times. Thanks.
Thank you very much. I thought that the members would perhaps draw the would take notice of what was said by National Treasurer from slide 4. I'm struggling to hear. I'm waiting for my spectacles. I'm just struggling to see. But I think that is from welcome to those members. I know one member received a report, other member didn't receive a report. This is our new member, who is replacing Member Mangayi, and this is Member Gansner. Welcome to the committee. Our meeting starts at 9:30. No, it's fine. I think that slide 4, for instance, talks about a profession committee to consider changes in the program structure of the I find this very logical, interesting, for the committee, because the up to now, the role of the committee has not been really direct, except to be a question of us and them. But as you correctly saying that the introduction of the money bills amendments, it really is introducing a whole new formulation, not only for this committee, for all the other committees. And I don't think that we have really this committee found the right way to convey the importance of all the committees. Looking at this kind of reports, quarterly reports, and the unfortunately, Parliament is a very busy place. Next door, maybe there are more interesting things, because they are appointing the names of the people, and that's what people are interested in. Obviously, if you're next door, you're going to be on TV. If you're here, you're not going to be on TV. So people don't attach much importance, but you're going to appoint the person and it's going to go. This one is going to be with the people, and this is what is going to change. And it's going to bring change to the ordinary people on the ground who have voted us into Article. Not just the appointment of one person. But I'm saying we have not really conveyed this message sufficiently for other, what they call the portfolio committees, to take interest in this. But I'm sure we'll continue to do so. I think that maybe it's something that we, as this committee, will really have to look at and maybe get clarity as we move on in terms of what is the state of affairs, how do we, as this committee, how can we improve on this. I'm sure the committee would be interested in engaging in this matter. On the other slides, for instance, also the next slide, slide 5, about the program budgeting. I think they are very, what you call, interesting matters, because just broadly, if you're talking about programs, when you talk to the constituencies about programs, for instance, if you talk about a program, people just think different things altogether. But even for us and for portfolio committees, but the money bills, again, says if during the presentation, during this process of MTBPS, people are not able to effect amendments, during the budget process, they can, within the, what you call, within the programs, they can play around with the programs. But again, I think that, Honorable Salt, we're not really on par with the, what you call, with the developments. I suspect that we're slightly behind. But I'm saying these are, what you call, to me, I find them interesting, so that in those programs, how can, in other words, what this slide is saying, that how can we make sure that in those programs, those things that we think that are important for our constituencies reflect in those, what you call, particular programs. And the issue that Honorable Swart was raising, for instance, for me, on page 6, program papers and the public entity. I think that for a long time, the parliament has allowed sitters, for instance, in this because they fall under the public entities, to get away with murder. I mean, sitters have not spent billions and billions of money. But people are not trained out there. They need to be trained. Monies are lying there with sitters not being spent, because I think that in this under the guise of a public entity, because they have their own, what you call it, systems. Honorable Dr. Rari, the question, why do we allow them to have a system that we cannot, what you call it, follow, for instance, that we can't understand? But I'm hoping that with the money bills, maybe I'm putting a lot of what you call the expectations for me. Maybe I have a lot of expectations on what the money bills would do, especially for me, not as an individual, as a collective, that I expect that we should do out of this, what you call utilizing this tool that we have now called the Money Bills Amendment and Related Matters Act. issues of performance in the improving on the on these reports. Now, I think that to me, I find that those issues are very, what you call it, important. But also, well, I hope that when we go through this report, we'll be able to to identify our customers, you know, those who normally, what you call it, don't spend. But the issue, perhaps, the issue that you raised, in response, I think, to a question that was raised by Honorable Swart in terms of entities, where you spoke about the transfers, that there's a lot that is discovered there. They are not on the same path. What we would not like to buy as this committee is people who, situations where, whether it's entities or who, don't seem to be prepared for the next financial year. We are on MTEF, and we really, really cannot understand why is it that people come April 1, they are not, what you call it, prepared for the financial year. Then you hear responses such as that, the business plan was not ready, or the tenders did not do that. I hope that the Business Revenue Act that will be passed will continue to emphasize. I mean, it is very clear, the Business Revenue Act, in terms of preparation, people starting in June for the next financial year, come the next financial year, 6 months' time before that, or 9 months before that, people are still not ready. I think that there is no excuse. You cannot, there is no justification for it. And I was reading, I hope that honorable members read the report of the Public Service Commission on the misconduct of senior, what you call it, servants. And I think that is something that we need to, we'll have to invite the Public Service Commission to come and talk about those things. That, there has been a kind of frustration in terms of, we see people are not performing, instead they get bonuses for not performing. How do we hold them accountable? So now, from that report, it says to me, how do we work with Public Service Commission to identify these people, not to identify them at the end of the year? This committee is supposed to be different from the Public Accounts Committee. It's supposed to be different because it's supposed to keep pay abreast with the developments. We're not supposed to come at the end like it. They should be supposed to be different. So how do we become effective? It's it's a question that we would really need to answer. There's a lot of radical information that is available before us. Then it's really up to us as members. When I say us as members, I'm not only talking about this committee. I'm talking about all the radical, whether it's portfolio committees or what. So that is really the comment that I would like to make. I'm not sure if before I give back to National Treasury, there are any comments that people would like to add. No, it's fine. Would you like to respond? Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for the questions. I'll start at the top with Member Swartz, Honourable Swartz, about your question with regard to capital assets, and as the last slide shows, just at these very high level numbers that for national departments are sort of behind the trend in terms of spending on their payments for capital assets. Now, what all the projects all include. At the national level is going to be should be fairly evident in some of the detail of this report. Of course, national departments are not large capital intensive entities like at the provincial and local level. I think as shown by the first three bullets, you can see of 400 billion rand, only 8 billion rand at the, or 2% of the national budget is allocated to the payments of capital assets. I think you'll find in many cases these are for upgrades, renovations, or building of new accommodations and the like. I think I know, for example, there is a Pan-African Parliament that's being built in Midrand that is being paid for by transfers or maybe even capital asset payments directly from the Department of Old Department of Foreign Affairs, International Cooperation, that may be delayed and has been delayed for the last couple of years. So you'll find it's going to be mostly that kind of capital project as opposed to the roads, the hospitals, the service delivery type, direct service delivery type capital projects, which of course mostly take place in the provinces, especially for social services and for roads, that's going to be provincial as well as a large public entity under SANRAL. In terms of project reporting, it is an exciting development. At the beginning of last fiscal year, the Treasury upgraded, rolled out what they called a retoned Standard Chartered Accounts. The people who drove that project will tell you it was more like a complete revamp as opposed to retoning. And in some cases, there were some significant changes, and in some cases, departments, our customers, weren't able to respond because, you know, that is an issue with our government. Is where we often reform. We're often spending more time reforming than bedding down processes, and so that's why we're all sometimes out of breath in trying to keep up with our with reforms and with improvements. And the Chartered Accounts was similar to that, in that we rolled out quite a significant change, and I know that in the first year that project segment whereby we want to report on both a non-capital and capital intensive project. So IT systems would also be captured in that project segment, as well as the construction of bricks and mortar type projects. There are some projects like that are identified in the Appropriations Act through earmarks. I think if you look at the Department of Corrections vote, you'll find the building of prisons as one of those capital projects that is specifically broken out as an earmark because the Treasury wants to track that more closely, and they know that that's also an item that other stakeholders want to track. So that's one of those examples. But for a detailed report of projects, we can, you know, we'll be happy for you to request that, and then we can follow up. We have at the provincial level, we have a database that's even in addition to the financial, which the chart of accounts is a financial data, is a segment or segmentation of financial information, which includes the spending against projects, but we have also a lot of detail on provincial projects that is administered by our intergovernmental relations group. Another big project that you might want to dig into is via a report on the hospital revitalization program. So as a grant, that goes to that specific purpose, and every hospital and every upgrade, and whether it's an upgrade or a new hospital or renovation, is very much is very detailed, and that kind of spending on projects is available. So it's let us know what you are interested in finding out more about, and then we can sort of help you by providing you information to dig into those different areas. A national report on projects is going to be so voluminous. I mean, there's 30,000 projects, 26,000 last count.
You know, 29,000.
Yeah, you just want the top 29,000. So yes, let us know what you are particularly interested in, and the information is on that specifically is available. The last time we were here, Malcolm was, what's Malcolm's surname? Malcolm Simpson was here from our 2010 unit. That unit is going to probably evolve now past 2010, now that they've been, and they're still vigorously working on tracking the 2010 related projects, including stadiums. But that particular capacity that we built for 2010 in the Treasury is not going to be lost. And he did provide, I think, you with a lot of detail on the kinds of things they want to drive going forward. Most their first big project is getting a handle on the 787 billion rand, which is mostly capital projects, fiscal stimulus. We didn't wasn't, you know, as we know in South Africa, we didn't call it the fiscal stimulus because it was already embedded into our projects. Our projects weren't shovel ready; they were already shoveling when the financial crisis hit. But there's 787 billion rands worth of projects that capital projects that are out there that are boosting government spending at a time when private spending is falling, creating that investment and reinforcing an important part of the economy, the construction industry. So that we have lots of information. So we'll be happy to help the committee dig into that because it's a very important area. In terms of shift environments,
but I think that obviously the committee would like to have information on that. I mean, if you will make provision, if you want to bring your 30,000 projects here, we'll make a room for that. But I think that on a serious note, what we'll look at maybe is on the summary, like you do, so that I don't know if this will be covered in this report. For example, my first worry is that in the year when we know that it's recession and this 8.5, is it a quarterly budget or is it an annual budget?
Annual.
2% only when we want to create jobs. So I think that then the issue is that we would really want to, for now, we can't change that one, but look at this 16%. Who is lagging behind on the 16% and blah, blah, blah. Yeah. Those kind of details, I'm sure, as a committee would like to have, you know. But if they are covered in this report, it's fine.
Okay, thanks, Chair. Yes, the way that it's spelled out on this summary slide isn't representative of really what's going on. Most of that 278 billion, or much of it, in fact, or much of it, is transfers through conditional grants and to public entities who are also undertaking, to a great extent, a much greater extent than national government, the capital projects. So the percentage The total percentage that goes to capital projects you could find in the E&E as well as in provincial department budgets. But it's much bigger than 2%. That's sort of misleading. That number represents the capital, the payments for capital assets that are directly paid for by the 34 national departments. And if it's a conditional grant or whatever, it'll be in the 278 million. Also, what's not captured in these numbers is the entire equitable share funding. Equitable share is a direct grant, direct transfer or charge in the Appropriations Act that comes through National Treasury. There are a couple of direct charges that are not shown here that are very big and are very and are going to be very capital intensive. Equitable share will be one, and the municipal infrastructure grant is another, which is also a direct charge that does show up in other reports. So we can look at providing you definitely some of that information as well.
Now I appreciate the fact that you are an official of government. We must not look at this 2%. All we are saying is that this is a contribution of national government.
Yes, okay.
Yeah. So, that's the issue that we're raising, that national government contribution is only 2%. Well, sometimes we might not necessarily want to repeat what is done at the NCOP side with your national, mostly with your grants and what, but I now understand when the former chairperson of the joint budget used to worry that she doesn't have access to conditional grants and what. She used to decry that point. Now, I'm on her seat now. Now I understand what the point was that she was raising. I didn't quite understand at the time. Honorable Sir.
Exactly, Chair, I agree with you, and I think that is the reason why it's very important for us to at least look at, say, the major projects, because, say if we can have a report on, the 10 top major projects, so that we can actually have a look at them, because this committee, when it was still Joint Budget Committee last year, specifically in one of the recommendations said that they want to look at projects, I understand that we can't look at 30,000. But if we can look at, say, the 10 major ones, because they know, which ones those are, and just see how they're performing, how it's going, because this morning in the newspapers you would have seen, and it was mentioned by the presenter, the question of correctional services, the PPPs on correctional services, the building of jails have been stopped. It's just out the window now by the minister. So, we don't know what's going on, how much money has been allowed in the budget for that, and how is this going to affect the capital projects that we need to actually stimulate job creation?
Yes, thank you, Chair. And
sorry, Chair, before you continue, can I get clarity? Did you say you'll also be giving us the equitable shares so that we have a look at them, because they're excluded from here?
Yes, we can provide that. I think what we'll do in the next in the second quarter is provide, in addition to what's appropriated, we'll provide an explanation of the direct charges. So those those are elaborated on in the estimate of national expenditure, but as a direct charge, they're not directly appropriated. But nevertheless, I think we need to include that so that you've got the whole picture. So, thank you.
I think that you give us a picture that will assist us. Because sometimes we might want to... a picture that will say to us... everybody is committed to this job creating. Because the 2% as it stands now, and it's not conveying that message. But we agree with you when you say some of these funds are perhaps hidden in those conditional grants. And I'm just afraid if we think that at this committee we can take everything, I'm not sure. I'm not sure if we can really do that. That's why I'm saying just give us perhaps the summary that will assist us to have a good picture, you know. Thank you.
Yes. And yes, sir. Thank you. We will the direct charges and major projects will follow back up with the committee on. Certainly, with the capacity that we have, I'll be talking to one of our chief directors, Malcolm Simpson, who you met last time. I'm sure he will be able to come back to you. And in fact, the last time he was here, he gave that overview of the categories, breaking down 787 billion rand. That was already, you know, 6-7 slides. He spoke for half an hour, and you didn't get a handle really on individual projects. I think he jumped in a detailed way into the stadiums, but that's all. And he's getting his hands around that right now. As him and his staff, what they're working on just this week, I'll tell you, is getting very detailed spending information on capital projects of public entities. We have them for provinces, as I mentioned in my presentation. We have it for government. But again, related to Mr. Robbie's question on public entities, we didn't keep that in a database of our own. They're not reporting into the government-wide financial system, except on an annual basis. So they're not live on a system. And so we have that challenge, and it's something that we recognize we need to not let slip through the cracks. And in fact, that's his current project, is the public entity spending, which is as big probably as national, provincial. So we'll come back to the committee on that. In terms of SHIFT environments, one of the big enhancements in this format that we're providing in the quarterly format for the committee is the SHIFT environments. Because what we realized is if we're reporting just against the appropriated amount and monies have shifted in the meantime, then it's going to look like there's underspending or overspending. But we're not in fact reporting against the true budget that the department or the accounting officer, the CFO, is working with. He or she has moved funds in the quarter. Again, as the chair points out, you want to question some of that. You want to review some of that. You've asked your staff to look at where that might be a pattern. The adjustments budget is a wonderfully detailed document. If you can just flip through the adjustments budget and see. And I'm sure that's where your staff have gone, because in a very detailed way, departments in there report exactly where all the shifts have occurred, which again sort of is the accumulation of first and quarter shifting and wiring of funds. Yes.
Chair, on that in particular, this year I think the committee faces a slight challenge as well, which Robert alluded to earlier, is that the figures provided here refers to the departments as they existed at the start of the financial year, but bearing in mind that there are new departments and that there are functions that have shifted, and those functions have basically shifted with the proclamation of, I think it was the 7th of July by the President, or the 6th of July, where functions were shifted in the new departments were created. So the funds are now going to shift as well, to follow those function shifts. And so what the committee is going to see in the third quarter is a lot of that shifting, and it's going to be a bit difficult. And we are hoping that it's going to be finalized by the time we table the next budget, that all the shifts would have taken place. And Robert spoke about this earlier, where he said that some of those things are happening. Now, some of that, where DPSA has sorted out some of those shifts, some of that will be reflected in the adjustments appropriation, but some of it will only be reflected by budget next year. We're hoping that all of it will be shifted will be sorted out by budget next year. So I think it's going to be a challenge for the committee because you're going to see quite a bit of shift still happening during the year. And it actually is important, I think, from National Treasury side that the committee keeps a keen eye on that, because part of our concern is that in the shifting of funds, things will get missing.
Yes, if I may use an example, last year the joint budget looked at, I think it was the Department of Transport, where they had a lot of vacancies, and what they did is they moved it to something, you know, the festival, October festival or something of that nature, which the you know, the minister said, but you know, have you looked at this? Have you seen what has happened to this money? You know, what is the October festival, the October month? The point that I'm trying to make is, you know, we only, as a committee, we only see those shifts in alignments once they've already happened. And the question that I want to ask is, isn't it something that this committee should look at before they actually happen?
You know, I like the question you're asking, but maybe you're not necessarily referring this question to National Treasury. You're referring this question to us. Because if you look at the money bill, I'm still not very familiar with the clauses. But starting from now, when we start with MTBPS, money bills amendment profit and related matters act says during this period of MTBPS, it gives procedures in terms of how Parliament can amend the budget, the rest of the budget. If you say, no, this should move, or, but once the budget, once the minister submits the budget, it means that now the fiscal framework has been adopted. So what it says is that now we can do what you think before the departments do it, in terms of saying, no, this program must be moved from here, and it's supposed to be moved to within the what you call the fiscal framework now. That is the only difference between now and that time, that within the fiscal framework, we can play around ourselves. And I think that we need now to tell them, to say to them, that is a requirement of the law now, that they must tell us upfront where they think that they are going to shift, there's going to be a shift of what you call of funds around. And it is the report, I mean, the legislation, that law requires that they must report. In the past, as you say, you just see these things happening, but now they are required now to give us a report why they are shifting, if they have to shift, they want to shift to this fund around, why they are doing it. So I think that we really have to be on our toes as Parliament, not only us.
Also on the Moneyball's amendment procedure, related matters.
Whatever.
It requires every committee of Parliament, so it's not just on this committee, because it's going to be quite a lot for this committee to do. It requires every committee of Parliament to table a budget review and recommendation report, looking at precisely those things, looking at the annual report, the Section 32 reports, the quarterly reports, the strategic plan, so all of those things, and any other information that comes. So at any point, they can call the department in. Again, if it's transport, they can call the transport department in. And at the end, when the MTBPS report is tabled, each committee is obliged to table this report. It must be sent to the relevant minister as well as the Minister of Finance, and it must contain clear recommendations about what the concerns are, so that all of those recommendations can be addressed in the budget the next year before it gets to be tabled. So there's a good system in place there in terms of the Act.
And above that, that Act sets you up, Honorable Swart, and the members of this committee, that once that portfolio committee feels that they want to shift around. It must come back to us. Yeah. Yeah, it must come back to us now to say no, we agree.
Yeah.
Mm.
No, thank you, Chair. I was just whispering to my colleague that the Act specifically empowers this committee with specific responsibilities. So, and being that this is new to Parliament, I'm sure there's going to be a learning process amongst different committees and the Treasury and the departments when they, most departments have never even heard of that Act, by the way. If you speak to them, they don't even know Parliament's got the power.
Yeah.
There were so many important pieces of legislation that went through late last year that I think people lost track. So the first time they'll find out is when you call them and say, or when you start questioning their budget allocations, and they say, well, we've already had that discussion at the Treasury and the Ministers' Committee has approved it and Cabinet has approved it. What's your problem? and they're going to realise that in January they've got a tabled budget by the Minister of Finance in February, but that's far from complete. That Parliament is vigorously exercising its responsibilities, and departments are going to have to respond in accordingly. And I think some of them will be surprised because they've kept themselves in the dark for whatever reason. I mean, Parliament's processes are public, and it's amazing how little knowledge there is about the Act out there that I've, in terms of financial people in departments that I speak to, they're unaware of the implications or even the existence of the legislation. To get back to some of your questions, in terms of the Parliamentary Budget Office, I would just, all I would say is, obviously, with this increased responsibility and of Parliament, that the capacity in the back office, the technical, the IT, whether you are going to ensure that you are provided access to the systems, financial systems of government, etc., where you're going to build your own systems or what you're going to do, all of that is going to require dedicated capacity. So a PBO, would the Parliamentary Budget Office, is something that you would certainly want to invest in, I would think. The public entities question of Mr. Robbie, this is a trend that South Africa is not alone in the world with what some analysts call agencyfication of government, where we had these very sort of stodgy, big, large departments in huge buildings in the capitals, and they did everything 20, 30, 40 years ago. And in Europe and in the U.S. Especially, they slowly started sort of shedding themselves of whatever you call non-core functions, sort of taking the business private sector approach to things, creating new subdivisions and within departments and creating legislation that allows for the creation of a public entity, which of course is, no public entities are created without Parliament passing a piece of legislation. So Parliament has had a key role, of course, in setting up entities. They're not necessarily, you can't generalize about the accountability or transparency or usefulness or effectiveness or productivity of entities. I mean, there are very good entities out there doing very good work, obviously. SANRAL is a thick example of an entity that is delivering, that is seen to be delivering on its mandate of ensuring that the road network infrastructure is being maintained and built and expanded. All our national roads are world class standard, and I think we have to say that in the case of that entity, they seem to be doing their job with what information we can see in terms of the outputs of them. So the public entities, when they're created, they fall under their own legislation. Parliament passes legislation, then the PFMA also covers them in a certain way, and they require corporate plans. They use different terminology. Corporate plans are tabled with the minister as opposed to a strategic plan that might be tabled in Parliament, which is required for departments. They are set up as independent entities to a great extent. They can pay their people what they want. That's why they're outside of the Public Service Act. So you have CFOs of or CEOs of entities making twice what ministers make. I don't want to. That's a one number. I don't want to say that that's common. There are ministers and DGs out there who are starting to question this and saying people that report to them are earning more than them. Now, whether that's a valid inquiry or not, I'm not going to judge. But it does set up these sort of these situations. Sorry? Well, Eskom's always been an independent. I'm not going to get into that discussion.
we will get into that discussion. we don't have a problem. We have an example of your RAS, Road Agents of Limpopo. With the salaries that the agencies get, vis-a-vis that the high HOD gets, but which doesn't take into account the performance of the water card. As you say correctly, some are doing well, but some, they leave much to be desired. And unfortunately, if the laws that we pass that create those, what you call it, those agents, sometimes make things very difficult now if you want to deal with the CEO or close it. We shoot ourselves sometimes in the foot with the kind of legislation there. But I think that with the other laws that have been there being reviewed, it's clear that with many of them, there must be a way. And I think that, if you look at this 787 billion, most of it resides in those what you call public entities. So we can't throw money and walk away. We just need to know exactly, is there value for money there? Is performance? I don't know if maybe colleagues in public enterprises, they're doing those kind of things. We really don't know. But I think as this committee, we don't want to do everything. But we think that we really have to do some kind of monitoring. It can be that in most cases they are only discovered during the AG's report that there had been problems. But I think that we must monitor them like we do with all the other articles. They act under, their report, they report also in terms of Public Finance Management Act. Therefore, they are supposed to account. We're supposed to invite them here to account. Sure.
Yes, now I was, one last point is, just to say, when you talk about Eskom, that public enterprises are yet a separate subset of public entities and also fall under, they're treated differently from other public entities like ours. For example, like the SANRAL or some of our museums or our arts and culture facilities. Eskom and Telkom and the post office and examples like that are actually... Again, and yet another animal. PFMA prescripts, you said you're not. The question was about whether departments are really adhering to the PFMA. Zarina, do you have a comment on that?
That's a difficult one for us as Treasury. In as far as we provide guidelines, we do that in terms of the PFMA. But in terms of adherence, that is what we rely on Parliament to ensure in terms of whether it's strictly to the PFMA. We do monitor these things, and hopefully some of those things come up in terms of these reports. But that's about as far as we can go, because as Treasury we are tasked with monitoring and we are able to monitor, but in terms of whether we can call other departments in line, it then becomes a bit difficult. But in terms of guidelines that we can issue as Treasury, and those guidelines are issued on an annual basis for and in great detail as well in terms of our regulations. But that's the difficulty in terms of adherence or not. But it's where departments are not adhering, we often rely on Parliament to begin to pick up those things. And that is why accountability to Parliament is fairly important, and why we, and just in terms of the reporting format as well, it's important that we get feedback so that we can then act on those things. One of the key things about the Money Bowls Act as well as Amendment Act is that with the budget review and recommendation report, once it's tabled in the House and adopted by the House, it's a resolution of the House, it then becomes easier for Treasury as well to then say, this is a report of Parliament in which they're saying these things, and so we can then use those things as a basis. But when Parliament has a discussion and we don't get a report out of that discussion, it then becomes more difficult for us, because it has to be a resolution of the House.
Are you having a hand?
On that specific point, I agree that in the past 5 to 10 years, portfolio committees on the agenda, finance was actually not there. That's what happened in the long run. And I think there is a change also happening there. There's more active involvement from the portfolio committees on that. I think that will also assist us in doing our job. In the past, people think the Auditor General will look at that. But then it's 2-3 years too late. And I think that shift will come. Thank you, Jeff.
The National Treasury is our partner. Our partner in terms of Section 6 of the functions and powers of National Treasury of the PFMA. But I think that one appreciates perhaps the difficulty that National Treasury finds itself, that of not wanting to be your super, what you call it, department. But maybe then that's where the money bills come in, so that Parliament can really play its role. And I think that what you're saying, Comrade, in terms of not only Parliament or the legislatures, people think that it's only the finance committees that must deal with this. And that has been the problem. And even now with the annual reports, portfolio committees relegate these things to SCOPA. They don't deal with these things. And I think that it's unfortunate that after 15 years, we're still not understood that as portfolio committees, we must deal with everything that relates to a department. And because if you don't do that, that's why I think we find situations where these money sometimes have been spent, and nobody knows how these money have been spent. Only AG that can pick up that people have enriched themselves. It's because our oversight is not very effective, to say the least. Not very effective. And we really need to find a way so that it must not be after sunset that to begin to feel that, oh, there were people during the day. We must see them during the day. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think we also encounter problems where with this transfers. I'm going to go to the MIC and call it PIG, where we realize that money has gone out, but somewhere along the line, I don't know the role we play there, because National Treasury knows that there's pieces of money going out for infrastructure, and it gives us problems when it comes to us. because at the local level, we know that the municipality should be spending that big sum of money to improve, because that's where the people who voted for us are. And for us to be questioning all these things and to be bringing in SALGA, what's our responsibility, SALGA? Why is this money taking so long? Because we know here is money, but there are no whatever infrastructure needs to be there, it's not there, and all this money is being piled up in one of these spheres of government, and we know that it has gone out of the hands of national department, and it leaves us as if we are not capable in monitoring, whereas there are a lot of scapegoating there, pushing the bags from here to here. Where do you tie it up as the department? I hope you're not going to say it's the duty of parliament to do that. Because you also like want to know that when they come here, they spend that money, their schools, their streets, the water, drainage, storm water is being well done. Where should we grab it? Because we want to see proper usage of the money that is being appropriated. Whether it's especially when it's conditional grants, because they need to do a specific type of work there. But this pushing of the bag, I think the National Treasury must also give us a firm advice there on what to do.
You're saying she mustn't say that it's the role of Parliament to do oversight. Well, I don't know if she wants to say something else.
Thank you, Chair. I think what we are trying, apologies for coming late, Chair, but when I listen here, it's as if we are, whatever this law that we are having, the money bill and the others, and like we are having the national treasury, we are actually trying to enforce Chapter 3 of the Constitution, which is cooperative governance, whereby one thing cannot be done by one department because there has to be checks and balances. So, but at the end of the day, there has to be coordination, integration, though interdependence, depending on the mandate that each department is given by the Constitution. So what we are actually saying is that these legislations that are coming up, like the money bills, they are actually to enforce cooperative governance, Chapter 3 of the Constitution, where the National Treasury will do this because up to the mandate that they are given, constitutional, Parliament will do this up to the certain level because due to the constitutional mandate. But at the end of the day, as they say that, they have to get the report. You know, that's where cooperation now and integration has got to come. Because they cannot be all over. They have to stop somewhere because of the coordination. So this is all what we are trying. I think this is all what they have been saying and what the chair and us, we are all trying, what in the legislations that are coming up, we are actually trying to enforce cooperative governance, which is Chapter 3 of the Constitution.
Does that bring my attention to some of the things that we need to raise? Sorry about that. But I think that you are trying to assist us as National Treasury. That it's National Treasury has a role, as much as we have a role, as much as if you take the Municipal Finance Management Act, the provinces have a role over municipalities. The Constitution makes national department or government to make some interventions. So our oversight, it's not just one, what you call it. I think you put it very, what you call it, but it's not only the National Treasury.
it's a range of what you call the tools that are there, and it's supposed to intervene. And thank you very much. You want to comment on that?
Chair, I agree completely, and more specifically, Honourable Member Mashiko, on issues that are done at local government and provincial level where the competence lies there, such as the MIG and the infrastructure grant for provinces. We do provide quarterly reports as well, but that goes to your counterparts in the NCOP. And again, the national treasury, while we monitor the national departments, so in the case of education, for instance, have to be called in along with provincial departments to say, now, that much was spent, where are the schools, how many schools, where has it been built? And I think that's the type of cooperation that we then have going. But we do monitor those, and we do get the figures from the provincial departments as well in terms of those reports.
To follow up, so it comes back to this money bill then, because we see nothing is happening. So not necessarily nothing is happening. So I think the money bill really is going to help us a lot, because really we can't be going on like this for the next 20 years, next 50 years, hammering on one thing, knowing that we each have a role to play, but at the end of the day, we don't see the role we play. In inverted commas, because it's really frustrating to be hammering the same thing every day. Thanks.
But also just to be effective as well, the other area that we need to, other people that we need to take on board, so that when we do public hearings, is the relevant portfolio committee. Mm. Yeah. Up to now, I think we have not been able to do well in that area, because for us, I mean, we'll be fooling ourselves if we think that we're going to monitor the whole government being this one committee. We need those colleagues and as you're saying, the provinces and everyone, someone who after this will go, when we do a resolution at the end of the day, recommendation, the only way that they can work is when we have the buy-in of those other, what you call a colleague. Alone, we're not going to, what you call, we're not going to make it. We might be so ambitious, but we're not going to be effective. Thank you. The maiden, what you call.
Jim, my thing is, you know, we're speaking about monitoring the valuation, looking at outcomes, and then for us to be able to then try to see how do we make interventions to get things rectified. But Bass and Purcell, I really don't believe that Bass and Purcell can monitor outcomes. And what are we are planning to do about that? I mean, we pass budgets based on strategic plans. Bass and Purcell can't read those things. It's impossible for them. So we're putting in systems as treasury for people to become good managers, to be able to deliver. But the IT infrastructure that you've got in place doesn't assist them one iota, you know, in my opinion, anyway. Okay. So how are we looking at fixing that?
Issues that we are raising are the issues that perhaps it's a way of saying, in order to improve this oversight and the accountability, we need to look at some of these issues that are being raised here. But sometimes some of them you might have what you call a responses right now. Some of them are comments that need to be taken on board, on the issue that you are raising in terms of improving reporting systems, in terms of all these things. So I think those are the issues that have been raised.
Thank you. I'll come to the members' question in a minute. I just want to respond to finish the first round of questions, and I think we respond to all of them except for some of the questions and issues that the chair raised. just in terms of the consideration of the appropriation bill by this committee, it's an important point that we have brought to the committee's attention on this occasion and on previous occasion. We would like to. It's going to require sort of a back and forth discussion, I think, with the committee on what time and period works best and how to engage most efficiently with the committee. I know that we want to, you know, we think that we can have an appropriation bill structure. Obviously, it's not going to have the numbers in, but that's not the point of that engagement. It's to look at the structure, but we should be able to have one in December. At some point in December, maybe late November, we can tweet the when exactly we would be able to present it to the committee, and then ask, and then the committee would need to let us know when what would their needs be in terms of looking at it, interrogating it, and then giving us the feedback that we can then sort of document and say, okay, the committee's reviewed it. They're pleased with it, or they've made certain recommended changes, and then we can go forward with that structure, with a fair amount of confidence that it won't change in March or April or something when after the bill is tabled. So yes, we need to whenever it's sort of convenient for the committee, we'd like to have that conversation, and of course. Other folks from the National Treasury will need to be involved in that, because they need to sort of think through the timing. This is the first time we would have done this, so we need to think through the timing of when we will have a structure that we think we can bring to the committee's attention and have it and review. On the program budget structure review, that's a more focused review where we're looking at the programs themselves. The programs are just one part of the structure of the Appropriation Act, so they sort of overlap to some extent. But what we're hoping to do there, as I said in the presentation, is to bring those structures as we assess and them, and then either revise or confirm them with each department, bring them to the committee to sort of sign off on. And we need to discuss what that sign off means, what form it takes. And the chairman made a point on entities and departments that don't seem to be ready for the beginning of the financial year, where when you look at these quarterly reports and you see the first quarter and the second quarter, transfers haven't taken place, and the department says, well, it's because the business plan wasn't presented or whatever condition that they set wasn't met. You have to ask the question, you know, what was the department or the entity prepared for the dawning of the fiscal year, and why does there seem to be delays in getting things off the ground? We know that in procurement that is an ongoing issue, and sometimes it's valid for valid reasons that it takes 9 months or longer to procure a simple product. Obviously, when it comes to a large construction, a capital project tender or something, there's always going to be an extended lead time that's necessary. But the Treasury tries to account for that in those instances by using the MTEF to sort of scale up funding. We don't often provide all the funding a department asks for in the first year of a new program, because over 15 years' experience, we've seen that it's not likely in many, depending on the sort of track record of the department, but often it's not likely that they're going to ramp up to the extent that they say they're going to ramp up in the first year. Of course, if they do, there's an adjustments budget, and we can always bring money forward. I don't think we've ever had to do that. I think that in most cases, there's money on the table at the adjustments budget that we are saying needs to be reprioritized if you're not going to spend it by the end of the fiscal year. And that's one of the important sort of areas to look at in the adjustments budget. If you've spent only 30% of your budget by 50% of the year, that's an ongoing conversation every time. You know, have that, go to that department, are you going to spend your whole budget? Because we've got pressures here. For example, in the health sector, there's pressures on the HIV AIDS grant, It's always breaches on that grant, and they seem to be getting worse. And so if a department isn't going to spend some of its money by the end of the fiscal year, we would like to appropriate it through Parliament's passing of the adjustments budget. Those are often difficult discussions because the department is convinced that they're going to expend all their budget, even though the trend year to date doesn't demonstrate it. And so that's something that we often struggle with. And it requires us to look at those trends in the spending, as you've said, Chair, with what some of your staff are looking at in terms of the adjustments or the shift environments. Sometimes people use those funds for they might be underspending them in one program, but really they're keeping them there to shift to another program later on in the year. Which these are all difficult things to sort of monitor and track from afar. It requires, as you said, I think the very close sort of working relationship with the portfolio committees, who are much more because of their capacity in terms of their focus and their emphasis on one particular department or one sector of government, whereas this committee tends to be more cross-cutting, looking at spending trends in general. But how does this committee with its members get into the nuts and bolts and details of every vote, never mind the votes, but the entities, wherever the service delivery is actually occurring, is a challenge, and how you work with that portfolio committee to feed back that sort of that operational knowledge so that you can then link it to the financial is important. And if they're taking being more proactive on the financial oversight side, then that's also going to be a very useful, I think, reform for Parliament, and hopefully you can sort of use that their knowledge, their expertise to understand what's happening on the operational side of things. The last question, I guess, is Honourable Schnell. In terms of BAS and IT systems, in terms of monitoring outcomes, I'll just say that on the non-system side, as you know, and if you haven't had a chance to read the two green papers issued by the Presidency, they make for interesting and reading. They propose some very innovative approaches to both planning, from the planning green paper side, to how they want to set up the national strategic planning function that will be in the presidency and informing a cabinet subcommittee and then ultimately cabinet. The on the other side is also the Minister of Monitoring and Evaluation, and if you read the green paper on outcomes-based, I think it's called outcomes-based performance monitoring, they are building, as we speak, a framework whereby they can monitor on an ongoing basis key outcomes in government. I think that they're working with sort of 7 to 8 key outcomes. I think they want to set up 20 to 25 outcome indicators, but it's in 7 to 8 sectors: health, education, rural development, economic growth and development, safety, and a few other areas. The personnel there seem to be very intent on sort of focusing on what is important, but also on what's manageable. Not wanting to sort of try to be the central archive and database of all government performance. Even if they could achieve that in an IT system, they wouldn't have the capacity to really utilize it usefully. And in any case, then the 5 or 8 priorities will likely be overwhelmed by everything. So you've got to focus. You've got to be specific. And they are trying to keep the numbers of indicators to a manageable level. So what they do with those indicators, whether they archive them in the system or not, I think is still questionable. They seem to be taking the approach that they don't want to recreate systems at the presidency, at the central point of government, that they want to have departments track and monitor that performance. Departments will be very well aware that particular performance indicator is being monitored and being very closely. It's important for, I think, for us not to disempower departments by saying, by making them report information to central points in government. Not only does it result often in delays, the Treasury has seen this experience. We can learn from our own experience where the Treasury currently archives 500 indicators of provincial performance, and those indicators are agreed to at the provincial level. The National Treasury didn't determine them. They work through CFO forums and other provincial engagements in the sectors. The indicators have been selected, but when you are required then to report them to Treasury ultimately, and we make sure that it goes through a pathway that makes sense from a provincial department to a provincial Treasury to a provincial to the provincial Premier, then to the National Treasury. We've been very careful about not sort of cutting out important other levels of government. Even with all of that process, once you are required to report something to anybody on a quarterly basis, and people lower down the levels in the organization don't quite understand how it all came about, then they end up doing it for compliance purposes. And they're not using the information for their own management, for their own benefit, because it's not their indicator, it's the National Treasury's indicator, which you will hear. You will still hear that for those provincial indicators. So, the Treasury is trying to be very careful about centralizing things, about archive, about having reports come to the Treasury. What we're trying to encourage departments to do is through guidelines that we've issued and ongoing engagements, that they must maintain indicators, various management type information that they utilize on a daily basis that gets recorded and reported and that they can utilize for their own purposes. And the Treasury and the Parliament and the Presidency can benefit from that. That's excellent. But it's their information, it's their database, and it needs to be archived there. And so Mass and Purcell, you're exactly right, are not going to be... The financial information in BAS is part of what a manager needs to make decisions to manage. Personnel information in Purcell is what a manager needs to manage. But the manager also needs to know what the hell's going on in terms of activities, in terms of results. Well, not even before you get to results, but what are we outputting? What services? How many people did we see in the front office of social development today? And that's an easy, relatively easy function to measure because it's a frontline service delivery department. Provincial Department of Housing also should be relatively straightforward to measure. Not that easy to measure, and what the National Treasury does, and DPSA, the PSC, not that easy to measure what Parliament does. Maybe we should focus, and that's what the Presidency is doing. The Presidency is not saying we're going to measure Parliament this year. They might get there later, because, you know, it is money being spent, and we do want to measure everything, because it is where money is being spent, but sometimes you can't sort of overwhelm yourself, and you've got to understand and make priorities and count things that are countable, that are meaningful. So it's a complicated area. And the last point I'll make, and then I'll end off, is that the Auditor General, the Chair alluded to it the last time we were here, the Auditor General is beginning to audit this these indicators. They are very sort of careful about distinguishing between performance auditing and auditing performance information. They're very different activities. They have different functions in the Auditor General's office that does that. The approach that they're taking to auditing performance information probably needs to be discussed and interrogated a little bit more. And we'd welcome discussing and share and having an engagement with the committee on that, because I know that Parliament's more and more interested in what the Auditor General is doing and on the audits. Very important work and critical work and needed work. But if you're not sure what your performance indicators are, then what are you auditing? If you're auditing all the indicators in a department's strategic plan, sort of irrespective of whether they make sense, whether they're relevant, whether they're cost-effective, then that you need to sort of, I think, ask the question about what is being audited, what's the value of that audit. Maybe a different approach being taken would be even better to enhancing transparency and accountability. So the Auditor General is on that, is aggressively pursuing that. They're going to be able to qualify departments based on that performance information as of next year, the next financial year's results will be audited both for financials and non-financials, and the approach they're taking needs to be sort of understood so that we make sure we're not sort of causing any unintended consequences just because of the way things are being audited, because audits can cause people to react in some interesting ways, not always positive, interestingly enough. And I'll keep quiet at that point. Thank you, Chair.
I understand the issue that you raised, but it's my understanding that BAF and PERSOL were a Treasury initiative some years back. The way that the systems developed, with the outcomes based, and with us wanting to become activist parliament, seeing what's being delivered, has overtaken that system, in my opinion. So what is Treasury doing to... Are we just pretending it's fine, or are we actively doing something to change it?
Well, just quickly, I will say that, first of all, under development for the last 4 years or 5 years is an integrated financial management system. The Treasury is leading that with DPSA on the PERSOL side, and trying to think of what other department is involved. Mostly DPSA and the Treasury. The contracts have been issued for the business consulting services to come in and develop a new procurement system, which is going to be a part of the integrated financial system, and a new PERSOL, which will be part of the financial system. So three modules: personnel, financial, and procurement. So it's a very large and very expensive project. It's been swamped by delays. National Treasury is not, like other departments, also has its challenges with getting projects delivered and on time. It's been we would have liked to have got it done sooner, and you can, I'm not sure what all the reasons are for not having it done sooner, but it's been long in the planning, and now it's actually moving this year. So the on the IT side, we're not ignoring it. We realize that we could be doing a lot better if we had better information, more timely information at our fingertips. And we know that on the procurement and personnel side, that information hasn't been timely or all that reliable, especially on the personnel side. And so that's moving forward. Whether or not non-financial information gets integrated into there, there will be performance metrics of some sort. There will be a business intelligence. If you speak to the IT consultants, they talk about BI and they talk about being able to bring information to decision makers by mixing the data in the systems, so that you can actually look at different types of performance metrics. And of course, it wouldn't just be the Treasury system. This will be the national government's accounting system, and CFOs and people in departments will have the same kind of access to their own performance in relation to procurement, in relation to personnel, in relation to what money is being spent on, in relation to the programs and other sort of segments of the financial system. In terms of performance information, whether or not the sort of performance indicators get included is still an open question, because the budgeting module is still an open question. What does the budgeting module look like? An accountant will tell you that it's probably not a good idea to take an accounting system and turn it into a performance system, that the financials need to sort of have their own structure and their own system dedicated to that, and countries who have tried to sort of mix the two in national integrated systems haven't had the greatest success. So what might occur is we build up those performance information indicators, both sort of quantitative and qualitative, because you've got to account for measuring things that are not necessarily widgets that you can just numerically count. So and that might be built up in the budget system, that then we can have reported against on a regular basis. But sort of it's in the accounting system, it's in the financial system, but it doesn't impact the accounting side of things. think I'll leave it there, and I hope I've helped answer the member's question.
Thank you very much. Are there any other questions? I think what this means, members, then, is that we have been given these documents. We haven't had the time to go through them. The researcher here, however, is bringing to my attention some inconsistency with respect to human settlement in terms of between the figures that has been sent and the report. There seems to be some discrepancy in that area. I'm not sure if you have had the time to go through it, or you would want to respond at some other time than just to look at it properly.
Chair, it wouldn't surprise me if there are some areas where where there might be differences in what is sort of in the analysis versus what's in the database. This is, as you know, first time we've done this report, sure. And I know that in some cases our analysts might have been looking at information in the accounting system and not information that the CFO sent us in their reports, and so there might be some discrepancies, and I'd be very pleased if the staff can point those out to us, and we'll rectify anything like that where it's just a data entry or sort of data analysis mistake.
Okay. Now it's fine then, colleagues. This is the report. Now it means that what is going to happen, as usual, we'll ask the researchers. In fact, ourselves, we should just go through this report. But the researchers will identify those departments that we think that it needs to be invited because they have not stand in line with their a commitment to do so. Then normally we know that with the researchers, then they communicate with national tolerance, they communicate with the relevant departments. I'm sure once we do that, we will invite, we have date of hearings, we will invite the national department, national treasury, as usual, to be there with us. But for National Treasury, I would really like to take this opportunity to thank yourselves. I think this was a very useful presentation, and with the reforms as well that are taking place, I think they are very challenging to this committee. It's clear that we are on a learning curve, as you indicated, and all of us, we can contribute to improving those reports, whether the budget format, as you suggested. I'm sure we will come up with such a set date as to when can we look at some of these things. Thank you very much. With members, again, I think that, as I've indicated, that we'll look at this. But I think that there are things that are outstanding. On tomorrow, what are we doing? Tomorrow is a strat plan. And I think that the strat plan is coming just at the right time. It's a pity that we have not properly interrogated the suggestions, that the proposals that National Treasurer is coming up with so that we could as well fit them into our programs. I have been invited by the House Chair, Bella, who is responsible for committees tomorrow morning. You didn't say that, I must say it, yeah, but I would want to say it because it's important that at least when I meet him, I have more or less an idea of what we're looking at. Do you know what is the line? Well, I suppose that he is inviting us. They have set up a task team. I think that task team, if I'm correct, is working with National Treasury, such as the collection in terms of program, of how to implement your money bills, procedures and related matters act. Now, I think it's clear that everything that we're doing will impact on that piece of legislation. And I have no idea what that task team is having, but I think that we need to have an idea, for instance, around the Honorable Swart raised the question of the budget office, parliamentary budget office. It's clear that those are some of the what we call urgent matters to deal with. But generally, we have not been able as we had thought that we would be able to work with committees of all the, I mean, with all the what we call committees, portfolio committees, with all the chairpersons to say, how do they, I mean, for them to make suggestions to us in terms of the process of implementation of the money bills. And I suspect that one thing is that next, we're going to a break now. From when we come back early October, MTBPS will be what you call a table. What is the date? 27th October. So it means that the date 27th October, it will be implemented. But I think that maybe what the House Chair again would like us to assist in guiding Parliament is to say, what do we think that could be done this year? Robert was saying, I agree with him, that there are committees, but if you're talking about this Money Bills, Procedures and Related Matters Act, people won't even know what you're talking about. The reason is that there are about 50 committees, each one doing its own thing. That coordination is very difficult to, but there are some of the issues that all of us, common things that we all need to be on par about, is the implementation of this. It's going to impact on other people. But what we wouldn't like to do is to move too much ahead of other people when we know that we have not held workshops for the other committees. Sometimes we have attempted in the past to come up with dates and so that the chairpersons of parliament, of parliamentary committees, and especially the chairpersons and the whips, and in fact finally getting to each and every member of parliament to understand this animal, so that when we move, we say this year we can do this. It's because we know that broadly speaking, the majority of the committees have an idea of what we want to talk about. So I'm saying I suspect that tomorrow, those are the things that they would like us to talk about. So I don't know if you have a comment. Just for 5 minutes, Honorable Harold Bloom, before you look at the time, but so that roughly I can say now. In fact, in terms of the act, it's appropriations, it's Standing Committee on Finance, Select Committee on Finance and Appropriations that are supposed to be the champion of this act. But what Parliament did asked us as appropriation to take a lead on this, what you call, on this project. But it means that we can't do it without the support of the other colleagues. So the question is simple. What is it that can be done next year? Are we ready to do something? I mean, can be done this year? Are we ready to do anything, to amend? If not, what do we think that should be done then when the budget is tabled? Is tabled? I think it's those kind of things that will be asked. But this committee keeps on getting new members, Comrade Snell. In the past, we have had workshops, but one workshop will not what call ensure that we understand, we know the bill. We need to know as this committee. It's for us to go out and preach, you know, this act, so that everyone understands when you come to formalize. But we know that at least for this committee, somebody can tell you that this act says that, and when you know it's not. I don't know if you want to comment. I think from my own article, just at a glance, is that we're not ready to implement this act, the section which would want a committee to amend the MTBPS. Must remember that the MTBPS, just like a pre-budget, what you call it, it tells you
policy statement.
It tells you how budget is going to be next year, and if people want to amend, this is the time to do it. So that's why then the parliament would like to prepare that. Are we ready to do that as committees of parliament? So I was just saying that I don't think that we're really they require, I mean, it requires budget review reports by each committee. Clearly, in order for people to produce those kind of reports, there will have to be some kind of workshopping so that understand what is it that is expected of committees in order for them to go to the budget. Any comment? About the staff?
Chair, yeah, no, I understand it, and I think you know, it's also important for this committee to have the budget office up and running before we can really make meaningful inputs and changes to the budget, etc. But I would suggest that maybe what we can do this year as a start is just ask all departments where they are, environments and rollovers, because those are the things that we, you know, just to give us a report on those specific items. So that we don't have to interrogate them about it, but just so that we know, or that they know, what we're going to need to look at it in future.
Chair, just something more which affects all our members. I received a notice dated the 14th of September regarding a meeting which is scheduled for the 16th and 17th of September. Now, Chair, that's from 9:30 till 16:00, but we've got plenaries in the afternoon and we've got caucus as well. Can we get clarity on that as well? Thank you, Chair.
I think that maybe there could be a problem with our communication. It was initially, the third plan was initially set for the 15th and 17th. But we did not communicate with caucuses in time to request the 17th, as you indicated. I think that it wouldn't have been a problem to communicate to request Parliament to excuse us so that we could finalize. So I think the new program is for tomorrow to have that strategic planning on the 16th only. It's for this committee, standing committee on appropriation, is it in conjunction with finance? Yes. I think, yeah, I think collapsing with finances between the two of us. So we're starting what time tomorrow? Again, starting 9:30 in the venue?
C249.
Okay. I'm told then that all the members have got that notice. But thank you very much for bringing that to our attention, all of us.
So I understand you correctly that we're not sitting on Thursday. But Chair, would you also like to just maybe inform the other members with regard to the 25th of September, as far as the program is concerned? No, I haven't lobbied anyone, but I think, you know, the 24th is a public holiday. Mm. And we've got a meeting scheduled for the 25th, which means we've all got to sit here on that public holiday, and it's Heritage Day, and you know, many of us would like to be in our constituencies on that specific day. And then we've just got to come back for the 25th that morning to have a, you know, a sitting of the committee. So we wondered whether we couldn't have start earlier on the 23rd and have the you know, the whole morning for two meetings.
No, it's fine. I think that we persuaded without going to other members on the fact that we'll bring forward the work that we are supposed to do on the 25th. So that I know that when it's, that holiday, Honorable Mkhudisi would like to go to the Platte River, Engome, Nomamungoma. So they won't go there on the 24th and come back, then they expected to be here the next day. So I think that let's do that. Have some kind of a long weekend. But on Thursday afternoon, the sitting will take, how long is the sitting? On Thursday afternoon, we're having the Department of Energy. Yeah, so it's a joint meeting with the SLEC committee.